Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Deborah Frances White here, and I'm on Instagram Live doing the new normal from The Guilty Feminist. And today, my special guest is Dan Schreiber from No Such Thing as a Fish. Now, we did a Guilty Feminist, No Such Thing as a Fish crossover not long ago, No Such Thing as a Guilty Feminist, and it was a big hit. We must do another one of those after the Now Times. So I'm going to bring on Dan in a minute when a few more people come. In fact, Schreiberland there, he's asked to be in the video. Now, Trelease Cooper, very kindly, after my glasses broken, no opticians were open, very kindly said they would send me some new glasses because they didn't have them in my strength, so they found some for me. And then they sent me, I'm going to show you this because it's incredible. Hold on. How do I turn this around? Here we go. They sent me this beautiful box, and inside, look, in a beautiful silk bag, they sent me, these are also Trelease Cooper glasses that are a little bit beaten up. So I have a grab bag now of like a dozen pairs of glasses, because they said that I can have something for every, like different colours and different things, because I've worn them a lot in press. So I'm going to grab some at random. This is Lucky Dip. And they're the ones I'm going to wear today. All right. Let's see what I've pulled out. Okay. I'm going to turn them around. These are the ones. These are my new Trelease Cooper glasses that I have done a lucky dip from my lucky box, because I'm a very lucky girl. Hold on. All right. Ready? Oh, wow. How exciting is that? I have brand new glasses in so many different colours. Most of my career is now answering the question, where did you get those glasses? And the answer is always Trelease Cooper. And she's a New Zealand designer. And it turns out she's a fan of the podcast. And I'm a fan of her glasses. I'm taking my hair out because I think it looks better. So I will be answering that question a lot more now, frankly. A lot more. Because I have a lot more fabulous glasses. So I think it's time to bring Dan Schreiber on. Let me see. Is he there? Yes, he is. Let's add... In 5, 4, 3, and Dan Schreiber! There you are!
I can't believe you've got those glasses, that whole batch. I go one pair at a time.
Well, these are really reading glasses. So, and it's like I can have the sort of average strength, but I need them for screens. Like, if I'm looking at you now on a screen, you're very blurry, so I need them to talk to you. But I only need, like, it's like a 1.25. My regular vision, Dan, and I don't wish to intimidate or brag, is better than 20/20.
That's impossible. That's superhero. I don't know what
it
you're
isn't.
Talking about.
No,
how is that
isn't.
Possible?
That's what I said to the optometrist.
Right.
Rob Dale, optometrist of the stars, I call him. I live next door to him. And it turned out like he was friends with all these celebrities. And anyway, so we call him Dan. We call him Rob Dale, optometrist of the stars. And he went for my eye test, and he said, yes, you need reading glasses, but your regular vision is better than 20/20. And I said, how can it be though? And he said, 20/20 is just the sort of good standard. He's like, that's what you're looking to have.
Oh, okay.
But it's not the best. It's just like, it's like a B plus A minus. It's like,
yeah,
good. Or like maybe a low A. But it's not, like, it's a 2-1. It's not a first. That's what it is.
That's so cool. I didn't know that. That's a great plan.
So I've got a first class vision, distinction vision.
Distinction.
For like, if I look into my neighbour's window across the road, I can see absolutely everything, and have done, actually. I mean, I've not said this before live on the internet, but years ago, I saw what was effectively a French film, putting it discreetly, in profile. It was absolutely incredible, but it looked so elegant and gorgeous, and it was like somebody had done a silhouette of the most gorgeous way anyone could make love. And I was just like, I was here with a friend, and we were absolutely compatible. And I'm ashamed to say we did not look away. We weren't seeing anything, but we just went, it's so perfect. I mean, we didn't film it, just to be very clear, but it was so perfect. It wasn't like I was getting aroused from it. It was just like, it was almost like they'd set it up, but I'm sure they hadn't.
Yeah. I used to edit Museum of Curiosity, the BBC radio show in Clapham, and my editor's place was up on the second floor, and he had his editing suite set up by a window, and I used to sit by the window side, and if you looked out across the road, there was a sort of frosted bathroom window, which clearly the flat was lived in by a group of guys, because it was the shower right next to it, and you could see basically guys just, you know, having a wank, basically.
You said wank on my charming tea time.
I know,
show,
I'm so sorry.
I said French film.
I know, and I paused, and I was like, I was searching for the word, and it just didn't come to me.
I'll throw it to me next time. Having some pleasurable alone time, taking some time out of the day for themselves, having a little bit of me time. Like, I couldn't come up with...
Can't believe I've done this to your show straight away. I'm not even going to finish the story.
I mean, anyway, so they were having some authentic pleasurable alone time.
Yeah, they were having solo sessions, and even that sounded weird. That didn't sound good. I think we should move on. I don't think my language is going to be any.
Are you sure? There's no end to that story. There's no twist.
Well, there was kind of like, clearly the shower ended. Person left. Next person came in, would do the same thing, leave. Mm. And it was very hard because there I am editing a show where, you know, it's like British Museum curators talking about Babylonian cuneiform. And on the left is a you can say what it is, yeah.
So, okay, so the turn of phrase "it was very hard" is a poor one in this situation. It was very hard because I was editing something that was quite sort of technical and charming, but not sexy.
Yeah.
And then I was watching a series of people in a shower. So what you don't want to say there is it was very hard. Just say, There was a paradox or an irony there, or it was quite a tricky work environment. Something like that could be good.
Yeah, tricky work environment. That's very good. That's, yeah.
But
I learned
so
much about language when I talk to you.
Coming in one after the other.
Ooh. It was weird. It was very, very weird. I didn't watch it though. I didn't do what you did. I did turn away. But occasionally you'd look out a window and it was just still going on.
My God.
It was very weird.
I could only see a silhouette, but it was sort of the art of the silhouette I was watching. We were just like, wow, that looks so... Because I think they're up on their knees on a bed, and then they were sort of... It was like a French film. It was like something that had been shot to look very elegant and beautiful and in profile in the silhouette. And I think, honestly, they were just... Unless they were... I mean, they might have been... enjoying the voyeurism. They might have deliberately done it in the window because they knew people in Camden would be watching.
Cool, yeah.
Well, I like to think so because I did watch, so hopefully they were enjoying that. I can't believe I'm a feminist, but I once watched my neighbours having sex. But there are sort of things that you see when you're, because we're on the top floor of a terrace.
Yeah.
Which is all these houses along the street have all been turned into flats. I think they're Victorian. But they were turned into flats after the First World War, I think, or maybe the Second World War. I think most flats happened around the Second World War. Anyway, this is not the new normal. This is the old normal. Now, when I'm talking about the implications of wartime and how they change society, it does segue me brilliantly into our new normal and what changes the world might come up with. For us off the back of this. And you're such an interesting person to talk to because you know so much about history and so many unusual facts about history and different cultures. But my first question is, how the hell are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah.
How are you dealing with it all? Because you've got a new baby, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that was very scary. My son, Ted, was born 4 weeks ago, and that was petrifying. So anything that's happening now in terms of our life is nothing in comparison to that. It was very scary going into hospital. Not knowing if I was going to be allowed into hospital. We're in the countryside at the moment, but we do live in London, and we transferred just before this all broke out down here to my in-laws' house. And in London, there's a lot of cases where the hospitals were saying partners weren't allowed to be there for the birth. So that was very scary, because my wife, Fenella, she has a condition where she's, it's a phobia of birth, basically. So weird paradox, desperate to be a mother.
A phobia of birth? Not just being a woman, though, being a cis woman is... Do we all not have a phobia of birth, or is it
probably
exacerbated?
Hers was clinically. She lost a school friend in childbirth.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and it really affected her, and it ended up being the hospital that we went to have our child in for our first child and our second child. So there was a lot of stuff going on, and she thought she was going to die in childbirth, and so we desperately were trying to get a C-section.
That's horrible. That's so awful.
It was horrific, and it's a shame, because it's kind of like when you talk to someone who's claustrophobic, or, you know, you try to apply your own logic to it, but the reality is, when someone gets in an enclosed space, there's no logic. It's mm-hmm. a fear, right? Like, fears are fears, and she...
I have phobias, and it is, yeah, it's the worst.
It's horrible. It's... So, yeah. So, we... So the double fear here was that I wasn't going to be allowed in there, whereas we've become a real sort of team over the 9 months, you know, mm-hmm. getting ready for it and so on.
And, but she'd done it once before, and did she have that phobia before?
She did. The phobia was the first time round. It was much better this time round until Corona hit. And then suddenly, you know, the idea of going into a hospital with masks and all that sort of stuff. It was, and you know, if she had to stay in, would I be allowed in at all? Last time we had huge problems post-birth with mastitis that turned into an abscess. And like, she had to have surgery. And if that happened this time round, she would have to be in hospital for weeks, but we and the kids wouldn't be allowed in there. Like all that sort of stuff. It was a different side to the sort of Corona pandemic that we experienced. But it all went well. It went really well. We had a really sort of quite, there were no complications at all in the birth or the post-birth. No matter what, there's always post-birth things that is not spoken about enough, of how there's just so many different, be it breastfeeding or be it stitching or internal stuff. Like there's just so much that goes on for months and months and months and months, and you don't know what you're going to get. And fortunately, this time, it's been a billion times better than what it was the first time around. Because the first time around was like a war. And this time is much better. But
imagine if you hadn't been able to be in there, which has happened to some people.
A lot of people.
And she's phobic. And she's, like, terrified of dying in childbirth, and you're not there. It would be... Well, the anxiety of that will cause, exacerbate something. So I'm so grateful you were able to be in there with her. And
oh, yeah.
I mean,
it was very lucky. We actually had this really sweet moment where I wasn't allowed into the hospital until the point where she was going directly into the surgery. So basically, I would have to run into the hospital. I'd have to go to exactly the spot outside the surgery. They would take my temperature, make sure that I didn't have a fever. If I had a fever, they would have sent me out immediately. So that was a big worry that, you know, what if I just had a random...
Think, oh, God, yeah, yeah, what if I, like, just feel hot? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So fortunately, I passed that. But there was 2 hours where she had to go in and be on her own. And I walked her in, and she was shaking and just so scared that I wasn't going to be allowed in. So I sat on the car with my mother-in-law, and we just sat staring at the hospital, just going, God, we don't know when we're going to get a call or anything. And she's all alone, and it was so horrible. And... then she suddenly noticed, she heard a bus go by the window of the room that she was in. And she thought, hang on, that must be the front of the hospital. And she looked out, and she could see our car out there. And she quickly called and went, look up at the window. And we saw each other. And we were suddenly together again, but at this distance. But like it suddenly, that was the game changer where we all calmed down because we could see each other. There was no longer this big wall in the way. And then 2 hours later, I got in and we had our son, Ted Harper Schreiber. Very exciting.
This is such a beautiful, heartwarming story of labor in lockdown.
It was a very, it's odd to have a Corona baby, you know, it's a Corona times baby. It was bizarre. The amazing thing was being in the hospital, you know, you're doing that thing of saying to every single doctor and nurse there, thank you. You know, thank you so much for everything you're doing for all of us. You know, this is, you know, we go out every Thursday, but that feels nothing in comparison to us. Can you give us 5 minutes just to say thank you, thank you, thank you to your faces? Mm-hmm. And they were so, in the way that kind of like superheroes are, just like, oh, no, it's my job. It's fine. Like, there was no sense of like, thank you. Like, that means a lot. They were like, no, we're here to help you. This is what we do. So that's
we
very
We should pay doctors and nurses and people, other people who work in hospitals a lot more than we do. Because as it turns out, when push comes to shove, they're the people we really, really need.
Yeah, yeah.
Teachers as well, and people who work in supermarkets and people who deliver things. Other than that, turns out we can function.
Yeah, exactly. It's a thing that you only really ever remember when you're back in hospital. And it's a shame because really, I mean, every single time that we've been in hospital, and particularly the last birth was, you know, those were my heroes. Like you just think we should be every day. We shouldn't use a pandemic to be the point where we're saying thank you. Like these people have decided for their entire life, they're going to help everyone else. It's just wonderful that they exist.
I did a job swap once with a nurse. So basically I shadowed some nurses and then we had a nurse to come on the show and do some stand-up comedy. And it was the only time I've ever been in a hospital where I or someone I loved wasn't in a bad situation. Because normally you're in a very heightened state in a hospital. And I mean, I don't think I've actually ever been to hospital as myself. Not maybe.
Right.
It may be, I have actually into the emergency room, but I haven't stayed overnight in a hospital, I don't think. But like you go to visit family or friends or someone's had a baby or whatever, but you're all in a heightened state. And just going there and shadowing nurses and seeing what they really do when you're calm is extraordinary, because you realize how much the doctors are diagnosing, but then the nurses have to carry everything out. The doctor's actually just going, do that, do that, do that. She needs that, he needs that. And then they don't have time to be doing all of that. And how much the nurses were explaining to me that they don't want to, that, you know, a lot of people go, oh, you're a nurse, because you couldn't be a doctor. And so many nurses were going, it's not like it's a very different job. The thing we love about nursing is you get to talk to people, you get to make them feel better, you get to cater to them. There was an old man who wanted a nurse went over and just had a chat to him. Because she could see something was wrong, that he was just not comfortable in himself. And she just picked up on it. He hadn't complained. But she went kind of, you're right, she'll do it. And then she said to someone else, can you give him a shave before you come off your shift? Because she said, I just could see he was, you know, he's lying in this ward. He's wearing it out. But he was an old man. And she was like, he just wanted a shave. That's going to make him feel more human today.
Yeah. So
and she said that the problem with the nursing crisis, that there are no longer enough nurses employed. She said, if you've got the temperament to want to be a nurse and you can't give that man a shave, all you can do is throw pills at him and run to the next bed. Otherwise, someone's going to die. Then it's heartbreaking for you much more than it would be for a regular person who didn't have the disposition to be a nurse. Mm-hmm. And so at the moment, she said, we can't do our job, which is the bit we love, which is how are you, chatting to the family, making sure everything's okay, making sure they're comfortable, making sure they're connected, and of course medicine, but it's within a wider context.
Yeah.
And they were talking about giving people a good death. They said, like, yeah, some of it's saving lives, but so everyone's got to die at some point. And either making sure their family's there at the right moment, like being aware, you've got to come in now.
Yeah.
We can tell from experience they may have 4 to 6 hours. And or sometimes they don't have family nearby, or they don't have family, and sitting with them and being with them and holding their hand and talking to them as they die. And they said that that's a big part of the job, and it's an important part of the job for them. And if they have to let someone die alone, they go home just in agony, because they're the kind of person that wants to be a nurse and doesn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
And whereas you or I, being the kind of selfish narcissist comedians that we are, we'd be like, oh, it's a long day.
Yeah.
We don't have that temperament down.
We don't. I'll tell you what, though, it's an interesting thing that you and I do. So we make podcasts, obviously, and yours socially is I think changes a lot of lives. I think yours is held up as something that helps lives, it empowers, and so on. And with Fish, you know, we do silly factual stuff, but as consequence of creating a gang, is that people who might sometimes feel stressed or lonely come to us and they chill out via us, which is a nice thing. And when we were in hospital last time, this is my first son, we were having we had the birth and there was all the chaos that came afterwards, and particularly the mastitis, which my wife Fenella went into the top 1% of problems with mastitis, like the highest end you could go, which is it formed into a rock solid abscess that had to have surgery, and sepsis. It went septic, so it was really dangerous. And we were at the hospital, this was in Tunbridge Wells, now Pembury, and they booked her in for surgery, and we met the surgeon who was going to do it, and she spoke us through the whole thing. And she's the surgeon who comes in, and on a Friday she will do every single bit of breast surgery that needs to happen on that day. So Fenella was slotted into one of those, and we weren't allowed to go down to see Fenella for the surgery, and we had to wait not only after the surgery but for hours after. We were told hours after, when she'd recovered, that she would come back up. So we weren't even told whether or not the surgery had gone well. You know, that was not part of the process. You just have to sit and wait and hope for good things. So we were sitting upstairs and waiting, and it was petrifying because you just hope everything went well. And we got a knock on the door, and it was the surgeon, and she had come up. And she said, "I just want to let you know that Fenella's doing well. It was a success. We've got the abscess out completely. It's all going to be fine." And I was like, "Thank you so much. That's amazing to hear." And then she said, "Sorry, just before I go, I just wanted to quickly say, I do this every Friday. This is my thing, every Friday. And sometimes it goes well, like today with your wife. Sometimes it goes horribly wrong. And those are the most heartbreaking moments. And every Friday when I get home after work, my husband is sitting there with a bottle of wine open, ready for me. He's got a glass. We both sit down and we both listen to the latest episode of No Such Thing as a Fish. And it brings me back and it reminds me
that
life is good." And this was someone who just, you know, saved my wife's life in my eyes, you know, telling me that I play a little role in her thing. And so we do silly things, but that was the one time where I went, okay, do you know what? Maybe actually we're doing something that's useful for the people who are saving lives.
100%, it's an ecosystem. Sorry to be so pathetic as to cry, but...
You're crying? I can't see that.
Firstly, I'm in lockdown. But second, I can see where that story was going to go. And as somebody who tries to put good things out into the world and you don't know what the consequences of those things are, I find that very moving, because I agree. I think what you've got with Fish is there isn't the same social agenda as there is with Guilty Feminist, but there is a sort of, it feels like you're part of the gang. You're very inclusive with it. And it feels like these people are your friends and you're not going to be judged as, you know, as not clever enough. It's a space you can come to be joyful, and especially the shows with the audience. There's something, I think people don't realize the value of having a podcast with an audience, because then it feels like you're part of a team or a tribe. And I think I absolutely hear what she's saying, that actually when she comes home on a Friday night, if it's gone well or it's gone badly, she just needs to come back and neutralize and be herself so that she can go out and take those risks again and operate again. So to make her feel human and connected, art is a very important part of our ecosystem, and we don't understand quite how much it is. But the brilliant thing about podcasting is we can do it in lockdown.
Yes, very lucky, isn't it? We can continue on with it. We're currently doing it over Zoom, as I'm sure you are, or whatever program you're using. But and the messages that we're getting from a lot of people in lockdown, so not care workers necessarily or key workers, but people with anxiety issues and we've heard a lot about how people with anxiety are actually flourishing at the moment because this is a world that they know quite well of being locked in. But we do have a lot of people with depression, for example. We're constantly getting letters, and they come to different places. So they'll come to me on my DMs on Twitter or an email to Anna of the podcast. So we share them with each other. And it's bizarre that that's the, because it's not the purpose of why you make the show, but you suddenly learn you're helping people just by going on, just by keeping a routine. And they're just saying, mm-hmm. thank you, because
my little safety.
I know that
I've got to know such thing as a fish to look forward to. And in a time where we can control hardly anything anymore, it feels like, oh, well, that's part of my routine. I don't know if we were talking, I did your show the other night, Show Us Your Shit, which was brilliant, by the way. It was so much fun.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. And
it is a show, you guys should all watch it, but it's where people show Dan Schreiber their shit. Mm-hmm. And it's a colloquial use of the term shit, just to be clear. Just stuff around the house. Just not to be taken literally.
Well, you took it literally. You're the first person to show me some actual shit. Not your own, a
just
cat.
Just to be clear, I have a kitty litter robot gang. Because we live in a flat and we don't have anywhere to, like, you know, I hate kitty litter boxes with litter going all over the floor and it stinks and everything. So we keep, it's like a robot, so it looks like a time machine and it rotates itself so the crap goes into this thing. I just have to explain that just because I just don't want that getting around. I don't want that to be a headline. Because tabloids pick this stuff up sometimes. I don't want it to end up in, or Londoner's Diary sometimes, they'll write something snippy.
Right.
And it'll be like, Deborah Frances White showed Dan Schreiber her loo. That's not what happened.
No, that's not what happened.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
Why was I talking about that? That I did your show. I can't remember now.
No.
When I did your show, what were we talking about?
We were just talking about distractions and...
Oh, yes. Yes, I think maybe I was talking to you about this on your show, but... that my routine has become ludicrously important to me now. And I'm the most unroutined person in real life.
Yeah,
but now it's like, I can't control anything. But what I can control is I do exercise with my Zoom, you know, I have these Zoom one-on-ones like dancing and personal training. And between 9:30 and 11:30, that's what I do. And that's what I do. And that's fine. Because if that's what I do between those hours, then life is totally in my control.
Yeah.
And it's so random because my whole life have been massively unroutined. Now, like, I have the same thing for lunch every day. It's weird.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Which brings me back to your new normal and how you're coping in quarantine.
Yeah.
Have you found any strategies for staying emotionally or mentally stable while in lockdown?
It's an interestingly timed moment of having a new child and having a lockdown, because the emotions that I did last time for the family are similar to what's happening now, really, in a way. The routine is kind of out the window in a way when you have two kids. I mean, so there's a two-year-old who we're trying to deal with how we become good parents in a lockdown, because that's extremely hard. You know, there's a lot of television going on. There's a lot of, I come from a childhood where I had a lot of toys. So I'm constantly just buying him toys, because right now my son has no friends. He can't see anyone. Mm. And it's so hard to tell a two-year-old, why he can't hang out with other kids, or why when we see the park, he can't run onto the swings. And it's, mm-hmm. we've managed successfully to sort of explain what coronavirus is. So if we walk around and he goes to touch something, we'll go, no, no. And he'll go, naughty coronavirus. We'll go, yes, naughty coronavirus. And we should smack coronavirus's bum bum. Yes, smack coronavirus's bum. Like he's really into the idea that this is a thing, that it's getting in the way of his life. He's taken that. He's 2.5, but he's managed to take that on really well. But in terms of like my emotions, the last time that we had a child, and similarly now, when things are going wrong or you're worried about your child, I tend to take the stance of I just have to remain optimistic about everything, that it's not going to be bad. It's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Oh, you've got a bit of blood coming out of your C-section. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. We're going to be fine. Like, just because if you go down a different road, it becomes very scary. And I'm kind of doing that anyway for the fact that we have a second child, but also for lockdown. Those two have really blended.
I imagine with a newborn, you've sort of got to... I was talking about this today with Steve Annie, who's... Do you know Steve? He's from Syria.
And no, I don't think so.
He came to Tom and me nearly 3 years ago now as a Syrian refugee.
Oh, yeah, of course. He's now
very important part of our family. And we were talking about this today, and he was saying, you cannot deal with trauma when you're going through trauma. You have to. He said, you absolutely have to use cognitive dissonance. You have to be more hopeful. You have to believe in things. You have to shelve things. You have to. This is how you cope. Yeah. And because he's coped with a lot more trauma than this, but he said, you know, he says it's a different experience if you've not been through a disaster zone or a war zone or something like that. And he's very good about separating that out and saying, you know, you can't go around going, oh, I haven't been in a war, so it's fine. You know, he said that you'll cope with it differently. But he said, it's really important. Like that, I know I'm shelving things. I know I'm behaving in slightly unusual ways for me, and it's a coping strategy. And maybe in a year's time, I'll process that. But I imagine if you've got, well, as you're looking at two small children as well and looking at their future, I imagine there's a certain point where you just have to go, everything's going to be fine because it has to be, because these small people need to grow up into a livable world.
Yeah.
And I have to get on with the business of parenting right now every day because nappies need to be changed and, you know, nap times need to be observed. Otherwise, this is all going to go into chaos.
Yeah, but the flip side as well is there's also, and I think quite a few people are having an interesting experience where we're all feeling a bit guilty to say this out loud. The way that Corona and the lockdown, not Corona, but the lockdown has allowed us to spend more time with our families, for example. Like right now, I'm getting such precious time with my 2-year-old son, Wilf. I'm not having to commute to work. I'm able in the lunch hour that I take to take him to his nap, and I'll lay with him and we'll tell stories, and then he'll fall asleep, and then I'll get up, have my lunch, and then go back to work. Can't do that on a day-to-day basis. I'm getting to hang out with my newborn son rather than disappear into the office all day. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, this has genuinely been one of the best things. That's the lockdown, nothing else.
Yeah, not
obviously.
Corona, no.
Obviously
no.
Nothing else. I'm not putting that in there, but this has been the most precious thing that could ever have happened at this particular timing. So it's and that's a bizarre thing, because I hate saying that aloud as a, you know, I know
I
a lot of people are going, people
yeah,
are going through hell right now, but
people are dying. And, yeah, and how dare we say that we are finding anything about that salve? But human beings are programmed to find silver linings. If we were not, we would not be the top of the food chain. We would not run the world. Silver linings are our bag. We go, okay, what can we make from this? What's the opportunity here? What's the best thing that can come out of this? What necessity is the mother of invention? What can we invent? And that's how we're programmed. So we should not feel guilty about it, but we just have to contextualize it in terms of the privilege that we have
exactly.
when we discuss it. Because obviously, if you're in a refugee camp, there's nothing good about this. It's only horrendous, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, there are people in your exact situation. I went out to Lesbos just last year, and in autumn of last year. And there were people in your exact situation with a newborn and a 2-year-old living in a tiny tent, in the most cramped, loads and loads and loads of tents, and they had to walk to, you know, inadequate showers, and say inadequate, you know, the people out there doing showers and sanitation are incredible, but they themselves say we can't build enough, we can't get enough, the sanitation overflows, we're doing what we can, brilliant things that they can do, but with not enough facilities. So, you know, there's, you know, when you introduce coronavirus into that, it's not like, oh, well, I'm having this quality time element. So, yeah. You know, as long as we understand how lucky we are and sort of what can we do with our platform to kind of make it easier for somebody else? You know, we are human, and you're right. You're getting to spend time with your children that you wouldn't otherwise get to spend. And I do hope that when we come out of this, we reassess a lot about the way we were living.
I think we will. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think even within, like, say, within our company at QI, there's a lot of chat about how we operate, even in the now, when we're all on our Zoom meeting going, well, this works, this all works right now. Why? What's the thing with the offices? What's the thing with all the big commuting? And, you know, I it won't necessarily just be about commuting and being in an office, but, you know, the way that employees have been able to see their children run mm-hmm. past, you know, that the classic BBC moment of the two kids coming in and then suddenly that guy is a megastar. But that's happening globally right now, where kids are running in because you've got a life going on around you, and it's humanizing these scary bosses who are mm-hmm. trying to hold a dominating feel over their employees and reducing them into humanity. And mm-hmm. and I think that will change. I think people are gonna have a different relationship with their work colleagues. It'll be interesting.
I think you're right. I was talking to Ned Sedgwick today, who does Global Pillage with us, and he was saying, like, I look back on my old life with some sense of how much he said something like hubris and excess, you know. And we were talking about what we might change, and I said, I feel like I will look at instead of cramming my diary, like, if you said to me, can you do this or can you come here? I'd go, oh, well, that week I've got Thursday night free. And now I don't, like, I was doing something every night and every day and every minute of every day. And I think now I would go, I'm going to look at the shape of that week.
Yeah.
And I'd go, oh, that week's quite busy. So actually, why don't I look into the following week or the one after that, rather than going, there's a 2-hour window. So yes, I can fill it, because I've realized what anxiety and what pressure there was on my body running around the way I was,
yeah,
in such a manic way, because it was possible going, I'll be here, I'll do this. And especially, as you say, when you've got two small children, it's really easy to let work and all of the, you know, and the pressure you must feel to be successful as well when you've got two small children.
Yeah, exactly. You almost want to accelerate that. You almost want to go, okay, I need to do more now. I need to make sure they have a good life and they have, you know, that we've got enough money for them to be, you know, comfortable and fed. And yeah, it, mm-hmm. it does. It really accelerates.
And buy them toys because they're in
so
lockdown.
Many toys.
Although
so many
I feel like some of the toys are for you, just from some of the Instagram posts I've seen.
There's been a lot of accusations from certain people. Fenella's one of them, making that point. Yeah, that's true.
What was the first present that you bought your son, your first son, your eldest son?
It was a Spike Milligan print for the wall. And then
real way for a baby?
Well, it's inspiring to look at on the wall. I think, you know, to have interesting art on the wall is really good. I bought him a original Mork and Mindy toy of Robin Williams in its original packaging from the 1970s.
Which will be so cool, because all of his friends will be really into Mork and Mindy. When he's 5, yeah, he'll be able to invite his friends around and go, guess what I've got? Nanu Nanu. And then they'll be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
I know. They'll be like, is he a YouTuber? And they'll be like, no, he's from a television show from the 1970s.
Well, in your scenario, you've got Wilf playing with the toy. He's not taking it out of the package. I don't know where you got that from. That's sitting on a shelf.
Oh, I see. It's a collector's item.
Yeah.
So it's something he's allowed to look at but not touch.
No, I promised myself, and because I'm not a collector, I open stuff up. If the day he wants to open it and play with it, he can do that. I've bought them to be played with as opposed to... Yeah, definitely.
But the way you say it is as if when that day comes, it will be a heartbreak. It's like, the day that he says it, I'm going to let him, because that's the right thing to do. If he wants to be a Philistine, it's not my job to inhibit that.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, is there anything that surprised you about your response to lockdown, or humanity's response to lockdown, or British humanity's response to lockdown?
Don't know. That there's so many different angles of things that surprise me in a good way and a bad way. I'm surprised that we're ready for the lockdown to end so desperately that we're listening to an argument from someone who doesn't even know what they're saying on TV, that we're sort of like, great, okay, let's go back out, let's hang out. I just think, well, what? No. That sort of beautiful thing just before I came on here, of Jacinda Ardern on this side of the screen and Boris Johnson on this side of the screen, and Jacinda in New Zealand talking and then Boris talking, and then the same thing matching the movements that they did. And you're looking at Jacinda, who from the get-go, I mean, her story of how she even got into power was phenomenal. So that she's already nailed it just to get into place in New Zealand as the Prime Minister. Her response to this, her foresight, her understanding of the science, her just absolute dedication to saying to a country, everyone just consider yourself infected with this and let's go from there, versus how he did it, is truly just incredible. And so the idea that when you see him saying stuff like, okay, Wednesday, start going out, you're saying, why mentally are we all going, great, thank you, been dying to do that. We can't, we need to keep staying in. We've got to save lives. It's so insane that we're even giving it a percentage of an optimistic, oh, you might be right.
It's like, I was saying the other day that I feel, to me, it's like there are two houses next to each other, and one house is full of money and one house is full of people, and they're both on fire, and the fire brigade can only save one. It's not an ethical issue. It's just like, well, you save one of the people in it, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't let billionaires make that decision. And I tweeted that, and somebody put a cartoon of a version of the trolley problem. You know the trolley problem?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, so if you, it's something like, if you divert the trolley this way, X people on the trolley will die. So you've got it. And if you go this way, if you let it keep going, two people are going to die on the track. So you've got to make a moral decision. And what's interesting is most people will say, I can't be responsible for the deaths of more people to save the deaths of the lives of two. It's something like that. It's something about your responsibility. And the cartoon parody of that for this was, you can, if you pull the lever, you can save you can save the lives of the people on the track, but the trolley business will lose money, and there will be a lower rate of efficiency.
So,
you know, it's like, that's sort of what we're dealing with now.
True. I saw while I was mentioning Jacinda, I saw a really nice tweet the other day, which is, there's been a lot of call, a sort of like, you know, jokey call at Jacinda to run the world, you know, get Jacinda to be like global president. It was just this one tweet that I happened upon as I was looking on a search term of Jacinda, of someone saying, guys, there's Jacindas everywhere in every country. Just vote her in. Find the Jacinda of your country and vote her in. We're only here because we've been voting the Borises in. Like, she's not unique. She's not unique. They are around. Every person, every country has a Jacinda.
What the fuck happened with Elizabeth Warren? Elizabeth Warren is so clearly a standout candidate. She's so intelligent. She's got so much experience. She's just bright and dynamic. And she's a real Jacinda. And I know in America, everything's much more centrist and blah, blah, blah. But essentially, as a human being, she's a Jacinda. She's bright. She's smart.
Yeah.
She's connected to other human beings. She's got a lot of experience. She started kind of grassroots. Why do not people go, oh, she's someone like me who would speak for people like me? I genuinely find it difficult to understand how the American election is going to be run between the far right and the center left of the same human being, virtually.
It's just insane.
And I shouldn't say the same human being. That's not fair. But a man who doesn't make as much sense as Elizabeth Warren, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I agree.
And also, the thing with women is there's very rarely outstanding accusations of crime against them.
Mm.
You know, like assault, and like, not, you know, not to be evocative on a 6 o'clock Instagram live, but it's, you know, I don't know, but why we don't vote Jacinda's in everyone. It's a great point, though. It's a great point. Now, can I ask you, this is a bit stepping on Show Us Your Shit, but I do have a question every day, and I didn't know about Show Us Your Shit when I introduced this, is, do you have anything you'd like to show us? It could be a pet.
Yeah.
It could be a headdress, an eccentric relic. It could be a Spike Milligan cartoon, print, anything you want to show us.
Yeah,
could be a baby.
Well, no, this is just so Fenella's on maternity leave at the moment, and and so she works at Penguin. She's an editor at Penguin and a publisher, and her creativity and her ability to put her finger on the pulse of what's going on. I'm in awe of how creative and clever she is and risk-taking she is. So she's off obviously on maternity, but the books that she set in motion are still coming out at the moment. And she's actually been nominated as Editor of the Year, basically the Oscar of Book Awards for this year.
Wow.
The awards are happening in July, and are they going to happen? I'm really upset because she's always very humble about what she does. And this is the first time where I feel like it's going to be acknowledged that she's this powerhouse.
And you want to see her on a red carpet in a hot dress.
Exactly. And I want her to get up and give a kick-ass speech because she's just brilliant. And
I love that you've assumed she's won there. And as rightly, what a lovely couple you are.
Oh,
charming and heartwarming to see.
Oh, well, she's amazing. I'm so incredibly lucky. And so what's really nice is while this is all going on, she's got new books coming out, and this is her latest one. So this comes out tomorrow. So I was just going to show it because it's an amazing book. It's I'll just turn the camera here. So it's called The Consequences of Love by Gavandra Hodge. And it's getting a lot of attention. So it was on the Times Magazine. This is Gavandra on the front there, and they've called it the must read of the summer. It's an amazing book. It's all about Gavandra. She's a journalist. But when she was 7 years old, she lost her sister. She had an asthmatic attack and died. And the whole of her childhood was wiped from her head through the trauma. So the book is all about how she's found herself back in life and dealt with the memory of her sister being wiped and how she's tried to bring her back to life in her life. It's an incredible book. And Fenella actually found it because this is a friend of hers who lived in the same area of South London that we live in. And she was writing it as a novel, and Fenella on maternity saw a couple of chapters and went, I think this is a nonfiction book. I think you should do this, and worked on it throughout her maternity. And then went back to work and had to pitch it to the work people and successfully bought it. And so now she's back on maternity almost in the same period that it's coming out. So it's really nice. It's a sort of,
can you make a story of that, Dan? And then we'll do a swipe up so people can buy it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It comes out
tomorrow.
At Guilty
Feminist, and I'll do a swipe up so people can pre-order. I tend to do a swipe up for Blackwells because I want to support a company that sells books and pays their taxes and
great
people and all that.
Yeah, I love that.
So yeah, and is there a piece of activism or feminism, anything we can help you with? So is there a cause, a foundation, anything you'd like us to sign, get behind, donate to, amplify? What's your cause of choice?
My cause of choice is not a feminism cause.
So activism's fine. It doesn't have to be feminism. Activism tends to be feminism because generally women are involved. Unless this is an exclusively male organization
that
excludes women, it is feminism.
Let's hear it first.
I shouldn't project feminism onto your cause. The twist might be you're a men's rights activist.
Yes, exactly. So Down With Women is a charity that I've been running for a number of years. And
I've met the only good woman. That's your t-shirt.
Exactly.
I've deliberately had two boys because I don't want to bring any more women into the world.
They need to go. They need to get out of here.
Jacinta Ardern and my wife.
Yeah,
top drawer. Other than that, not fussed. Not a fan.
Yeah. Two's enough. That's what I say. Two's enough. It's the thing that I tend to. My wife's best friend Mimi had a boy who got very ill and sadly has passed away. He had a very rare genetic disease called Batten's. Something like a handful of kids in the country are diagnosed with it every year. It's very tiny, very tiny, but it's a sign of reverse Alzheimer's. The body, the brain goes, and then the body shuts down slowly. And it was, it, it was horrific and it was horrible. And we did a lot of charity stuff to raise money so that the conditions of the family could be better. There's medication that can be given to these kids to prolong life, but they're so expensive that no one can get access to it. And so a large part of money that goes towards that is helping it. This is so rare. You've got to have two parents who both have battens in them. And the idea of two parents having that is so unbelievably rare that it's you, if you're someone who's pregnant right now, don't worry about it. Like, it's not going to happen to you. It's so unbelievably rare. But when it does happen for families, it's horrific. And we watched it firsthand.
And what's the organization called that deals with this?
There's a few. I'll put a link up.
Make a story, and then at The Guilty Feminist, we'll share the story, and everyone watching today can look behind that. If you've got some spare cash because you're not going to the pub, that would really help them out. And if you don't, because you've been furloughed or lost your work, just amplify, follow. If you're working for especially a small charity like that now that isn't one of the marquee ones, just having a bunch of people, 10 new followers or 100 new followers, is going to make them go, oh my God, people are looking at us. And, you know, just just even retweeting one of their tweets or amplifying, sharing them on Instagram, say, guys, quote tweet, if you looked at this, is going to make them feel so much more like people care. And at the moment, small charities really need that.
Yeah,
because so much of the funds have been diverted.
Exactly. And in cases like battens, it's literally like anyone who's listening now has heard of it. If that's all it is, it makes the difference to know it exists as a thing, because no one does. Like, even without money, just it's that thing of say its name.
So just to amplify and talk to the people in your life about it. And if you are I know a lot of people are seriously running short of money at the moment. But there are some people who've kept their full-time jobs and now they've got nowhere to spend their disposable income. So forward it to them and go, hey, would you chuck these people a tenner, or, you know, would you give something to the trust or whatever? You can be the one, even if you've got no money, you might have more time now if you've got less work. So it's really useful to amplify. Don't just sort of think, oh, I can't afford to give anything. It can be much more valuable to forward it to your incredibly wealthy sister.
Yeah, exactly.
Whose gym membership's been suspended.
I've been trying once a week just to look out so for example, I've taken out a subscription with The Big Issue.
That's a great thing to do.
I don't really, in London, I don't really buy The Big Issue. I should, and I don't. And it was pointed out on Twitter that there was this whole area of income for homeless people which is suddenly kicked out, and it's really easy to subscribe to them. And I'm very lucky that I have at the moment a job that's still paying me, and I thought, well, I would have spent this money on, you know, Pret or a book or whatever. And that's I'm just trying to take that money and occasionally
divert some funds.
And if a comedian puts a thing up saying, hey, buy me a coffee, I'm putting a lot of money into comedians, trying to do it sort of anonymously. I'm not saying this is a hero thing. I'm just saying it as it makes sense right now to try and help people if you can. Like, it really does. I imagine once this is over, I'm going to be the tight ass bastard that I am.
Sure, that's not the case.
I hope that changes, but yeah.
Is there anything we can support you on that you're doing? Fish is still going on.
Fish is still going on. Again, very lucky in the lockdown, more people need it. So our numbers are higher than they've ever been, which is amazing that people are listening to us in this time. My new thing, the Instagram thing I'm doing every night, Show Us Your Shit, is my favorite thing
great
in the world.
Great show. Really
it's
great show.
It's so fun. Every night, if you're free at 9:30, I talk to someone interesting around the world about all the interesting stuff that they've collected over a lifetime. And Deborah was on it the other night, and I had the editor Guinness World Records on his journeys around the world. You know, the chief curator of flies at the Natural History Museum, a man who's lived with time travelers in Italy. It's just a bunch of interesting
people. Can we watch your archive anywhere, Dan?
I'm going to put it on YouTube soon. So it's called Show Us Your Shit. And that should be up soon. And it's just fun. It's just so fun talking to people. And getting your episode was incredible. I can't wait to get
up. Bless you. So it's 9:30 every single night. Are you doing 7 nights a week?
Yeah, 7 nights a week. Yeah.
Wow, I'm only doing 5. I want nights off. Seriously.
I'm going to drop off. Actually, I don't have a guest for tonight, so I might just not do it tonight. I might just direct people to this video.
Just not turn up.
Yeah, just not turn up to my own show.
Yeah. I'm sure someone will do it. I'm sure someone fantastic will do it. But drop in on Show Us Your Shit 9:30, and you can watch it for 24 hours on the story after that, and soon they'll be up on YouTube. Really, really brilliant show, and so nice that we are, as you say, we're humanizing each other by seeing each other in our homes, seeing each other's kids and pets in the background and that kind of thing. So check out that show. Dan is a very, very, very charming host. Also check out No Such Thing as a Fish, and you can follow Dan at Schreiberland. And Dan will make stories of all of those things. And I will share them. If he acts the guilty feminist, I will share them. And then you can see the book, the charity, and Dan's other work, like Show Us Your Shit. It will remind you of where it is. And that will stay on Our Stories for 24 hours. So check those things out there. Dan, finally, can you tell me, if lockdown was over right now and life zapped back to normal, what's the first thing you do? What are you desperate to do?
I want to take my son to a park and put him on a swing. That's the first thing.
You know, you can do that now, right?
Not really. It's not safe. No, not at the moment.
Because you're doing the right thing. You are allowed to go and exercise in a park now.
Yeah, we go in a park, but I want to go into a playground. I want him to play with kids again. I want him to not feel scared to walk up to a kid and not us go like that. That's the main thing, is that.
I know. You wonder what that's doing to little children, that they sort of, you know, they'll be fine. Children are resilient. They'll bounce back, and the rest of their childhood will be, as you know, hopefully very, very standard. People are resilient. Like when I first started this lockdown, Dan, I honestly thought I wouldn't get through it. I was crying. I thought I wouldn't cope at all. It was like I had caffeine headaches, caffeine withdrawal, but it was like the withdrawal of the caffeine of humanity, if you will, Dan.
Yes.
I was like, I'm an extrovert. I get my energy from other people. And I was like, who am I if I'm not out there doing and engaging and on stage and connecting and, you know, seeing people and, you know, and I coped really badly for the first week. And I had Tom on the other night because a guest internet wouldn't work. So we just quickly did one with Tom.
Oh, nice.
It didn't capture that we for some reason it wouldn't download. So I don't have a record of it, but I'll get him on again. Because he said, I said, what surprised you? And then I said, what surprised you about my reaction? Anything about me? And he said, I was surprised how poorly you coped in the first week. And I was surprised how incredibly well you've coped since. And it was just like week two, I was like, I am going to find my coping strategies now, put them all in place like architecture and structure. And I am shocked, Dan, how much I now actually fear the end of it. I don't fear the end of COVID, but I do fear the end of, like, wish the end of COVID would come this second or 2 hours ago. But the end of lockdown, going back out there without that level of activity.
Yeah.
And I am shocked how adaptable human beings are, how much friends of mine who are just completely social creatures are now like, I quite like it in here. It's quite cozy, isn't it? It's quite comfortable. It's quite nice to just sit down for a while. And I'm doing lots of work, but I don't have to go anywhere. I have to go to public transport. I have to go for drinks. It's quite good, isn't it? It's quite good. It's like, wow, we're adaptable. My God, are we plastic?
Exactly.
We are such plastic creatures. And I think the smaller you are, the more plastic you are. So I'm sure that whatever your son is losing in society with children his own age, he's gaining in the incredible connection that he's getting with you. And you'll probably be so close all your life because of this.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing to say about how we're adaptable is the idea of, if we're talking about things will change and it'll be different. We are creatures of habit. We will fall back into stuff. It's important if we can try and remember the lessons that we're telling ourselves of how to be better in life and better humans, and not treat it like a failed New Year's resolution, not to just slip back into those, not filling those 2 hours where you're not doing something, like Ned was saying, you know, just making sure the lessons we've got here carry on. They might not, and that's fine. That's cool. That's not a problem. But it's interesting that we all got the chance to think about it for a while.
Completely, completely. And I think some of them will stick with some of them will stick with some of us. That's what I would say. All of them won't stick with all of us, but some of them will stick with some of us, and different ones will stick with different people. Is there anything else you want to tell us before we end the new normal? Any hopes and dreams? Anything you didn't tell us?
No, thanks for having me on is my main thing. It's so lovely to get to talk to you twice now for extended time. Yeah. And just keep doing what you're doing, because as I said before, your show is you know, we help people with our fish show with depression and stuff. Like, your show actively is changing the world for the better. And so keep going in this time.
One of the favorite things I did last year was our crossover show, No Such Thing as a Guilty Feminist. It was such a joy. And I really, really want to do that again when we're allowed out. It's going to be so nice to just, it was so joyful being on stage with you and some of the other ones I got to do with Richard Herring and drunk women solving crime and things like that. Had such, so much fun. But yours, I think yours was the first, and it just felt so, I think both of us have, I mean, all of those podcasts have brilliant, brilliant fans. This is not in any way, but I think our fans, I saw Rubes Walsh, who's been on The Guilty Feminist a few times, saying the Guilty Feminist and No Such Thing as a Fish have very similar energy. And I think it's because we share values as human beings. Mm. So although you don't talk about your values the way we do, your values radiate off you and you can tell what kind of people you are. So I think the reason it feels like an inclusive space is you're all really lovely, lovely people. And you don't have to be talking all the time about the way you should live your life. What you're doing is being kind and being charming and being welcoming and loving each other and loving your audience. And there's a great power in that. So keep being the wonderful fish that you are. And we look forward to lockdown being over soon. So maybe we can come back and do a crossover again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks everyone for watching as well.
Thank you. Bye, Dan Schreiber.
See you, Deborah.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, there'll be a T-shirt based on something you've said today. I always talk about the T-shirt and I forgot to talk about it. So we have an on-demand stay-at-home T-shirt done by the merch store. And you get 100% of the profits. If you don't want them, you can divert them to another comedian.
Cool.
But something you've said today will be picked up by Hannah and it will be on a T-shirt.
Please not the wank thing. Please don't put the wank thing on there.
It might be something about labour in COVID, or it could be something about, I don't know. Has anyone got any suggestions of anything before we go, of anything that Dan said before we get cut off? Because we're going to get cut off in the middle. Well, if you've got any suggestions, can you put them on Instagram and leave them for Hannah? Down with women. Oh, he did say down with women.
No.
He did say down with women. You're absolutely
right. I don't know about this T-shirt thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah. You've got to be very careful what you say on this show, because anything you say could be used as a T-shirt.
Two women.
Yes, do the wank one. I mean, it's really, I didn't watch the wank. How about that? I didn't watch the wank,
yeah.
Please, the wank thing. People's a lot. Two is enough. Two women is enough. People are going for two women is enough. Yes, the wank thing. Two good women, Jacinda and my wife. There are only two good women in the world, Jacinda and my wife. No need for more than two. I mean, wank, wank, wank we've got here. Please not the wank thing. Please not the wank thing is funnier.
That's great. I like that.
Please not the wank thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I love Jacinda. I mean, you know. Listen, Hannah from the merch store is going to have her work cut out just choosing any one. You've given us so much gold, Dan Schreiber. Thank you so much. And we hope to see you again very soon.
You too.
Bye-bye to everybody out there in New Normal Land. We'll be back tomorrow with Leila Hussein. And we've got lots of wonderful guests coming up. I will soon announce for next week, Monday to Friday, 6 p.m. right here. And feel free to contribute to our Patreon if you are so minded. We would love that. And also we have our merch at guiltyfeminist.com. Check out everything Fish are doing. Thank you and good night. It's time for me to have a large cocktail. Enjoy the nappies that await you and the sleepless night, Dan Schreiber.
Oh,
it's your own fault.
It's my own fault.
You've done it on purpose.
Yeah.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.